Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the growth advisory and activation firm focused exclusively on family-owned B2B companies. Today, I'm joined by Stephen Portrude, president of Harwell Express Press. Harwell was founded in 1973 by Steve's parents, Bill and Harriet Portrude, as a neighborhood quick print business. Over the past five decades, the company has transformed multiple times, evolving from commercial printing into specialized print management firms supporting corporate meetings, product launches, training programs, and live events across North America. Steve represents the second generation of leadership, but what makes his story especially compelling is his willingness to continually reinvent the business before circumstances forced him to. Whether expanding beyond traditional printing, shifting into event support, or completely rethinking the business model during COVID, Steve has consistently challenged the assumption that yesterday's success guarantees tomorrow's relevance. It's a conversation about adaptation, process, entrepreneurship, and what it takes to keep a family business thriving in an industry that has changed dramatically over the last 30 years. Steve, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Ed, thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. And for listeners who may not be familiar with Harwell Express Press, tell us in your own words what the company does today and how it's evolved over the years.
We've evolved from a quick printer doing stationary letterheads, business cards, and envelopes to a print management firm that handles printing for live events and trade shows for corporate meetings and events across North America and into Europe. This week, my staff's working on a show for Las Vegas and also in Barcelona, Spain. So wow. We try to move around a little.
Wow. So far from the neighborhood quick printer roots established in 1973.
Yes.
So your parents started way back when you joined, you brought a very different perspective from what you learned at Rochester Institute of Technology and working for several much larger print companies. When you stepped in, what did you immediately see that could be changed or could be different?
One of the things that I saw and did was to learn how to kick back and relax and observe. I found that from the last firm that I worked at, which was a magazine company. Don't immediately assume you know the answers. So the first thing I did when I joined my parents was I took a look at marketing. I took a look at sales. I took a look at manufacturing, and I took a look at accounting. And I observed what was going on. And then I went and had a meeting with both my parents and said, this looks like one of the most immediate things that need to be taken care of, cash flow, in any business. I don't care if you're a Fortune 500 firm or a little company, cash flow will kill you. It's king. And I saw that they had an awful lot of money sitting out on the table with their clients. And we built a process that in 1990, we still follow today in collecting money. We went from our average client paying us in 60 plus days to less than 30 days today. From that, once we did it, we created controls, and then we just built a system that we would follow. From there, I went into the other parts of the business looking at it and said, manufacturing seems to work pretty good, so we went into sales and marketing to build the business a little.
So that's an interesting approach. You saw, likely from your experience, it sounds like, wow, there's a number of things that need to be worked on, fixed, or improved. But in lieu of coming and saying, here's 20 things we got to change, you said, all right, there may be 20 things, but I'm going to just talk about one.
Well, the other thing is, it was a successful business. Mm-hmm. So if someone walked into my business today or in anybody's business today and said, you have to change all these things because you're doing them all wrong, without observing and seeing, your advice is going to get thrown out the door once you walk out the door. So that was something that I learned when I worked at a book manufacturer. I went in there because I was told I was supposed to fix it, and I came up with all these ideas. The owner didn't want to hear it. They loved the way they were running their business, and my plans got implemented very, very slowly, but they fought all the way. So as I grew a little bit, I realized maybe I need to have a little more tact. Maybe I needed to observe and see, well, why are they doing things that way? And then pick and choose the things that will help the business grow the fastest and be the most important to the business.
So when you started to enact change, and you first kind of sat down with your folks and said, hey, there's some things we got to work on, but here's number one, we got to really address the cash flow issue. Did you find them receptive to your ideas? Was there resistance, or were they fairly open-minded to what you had to say?
That's an interesting question, because there was resistance. My parents grew up in the Depression, so it was something that they didn't talk about, money. And their whole life, they saved everything. So their view of receivables was this was money in the bank. But it wasn't in our bank. It was in someone else's bank making money. As soon as we started, you know, digging into it, they understood intellectually. It's just, it was an emotional thing. But as soon as we created the processes of proper billing, sending out the invoices within a set period of time to the client, following up, not being embarrassed to say, hey, you know, did you get our bill? Do you have that in process? And then at 30 days, sending them a statement saying, this is what we have that you still owe us, and not being embarrassed about it. So it was the generation that came out of the Depression. I talked to several businesses that parents came that way, and they had the same issues. But once they understood and saw money coming in, and that eased up them paying their bills to their vendors and allowed them to make a better income, all of a sudden it was like, yes, this is the greatest thing. So, you know, cash flow is king is what I tell everybody.
Yes. And for any of those clients that pushed back, you know, I think sometimes you have to wonder, are they good for our business?
Well, you know, it was intriguing. One of our worst pays was a bank. And when I went to go get a loan from them, they turned us down because we had too much receivables out. And they were the number one receivable. So when I turned around my receivables list and went up to the marketing department and said, you do $100,000 with us a year minimum, but we don't want to work with you anymore. Everybody was like, what? I said, you pay too slow. I can't get a loan from you because you owe me too much money. I said, it's kind of funny, but all of a sudden, the marketing department got me a meeting with the payables department. We got paid fast. We continued to do work. And the payables department went to the loan department and said, he's a good vendor for us. How about if you help him with a loan so he can continue to help us? It's funny that sometimes you need to fire people, fire clients to get your receivables under control.
That is quite an ironic story.
Well, I got another one. I had another bank that wanted to give us a loan but wouldn't give us work because our prices were too expensive. And I looked at him and I said, well, so if I lower my prices to you, I won't be as profitable of a company. Would you give me a loan? The guy said, no. I said, well, then is your business really worth, you know, me losing this loan because you had a great rate? So banks are kind of funny sometimes.
They are kind of funny often. And I shouldn't knock them too much because we, you know, they obviously play an important part in our businesses, in our growth. and all the things that we need to do to function as a healthy business. But yeah, sometimes the little anomalies are intriguing to me as well. So looking back more at a little closer term, like maybe the last 10 years, if you look back, Steve, what would you say was the single most important growth decision that you made or that Harwell made from a growth standpoint?
It's going to be a statement that's going to probably confuse a lot of people. Not to grow for growth's sake. The two companies that I came from before I went and worked for my parents were in the printing industry. One was a mid-size 300-400 employee company, and he was forced into growth by the breakup of AT&T. He landed all that print and his business bloomed. But it wasn't sustainable. As soon as that business ended, his business imploded, and I was brought in at the end of that imploding, not realizing and watching what was going on. And then also, I worked for a company that had 10 or 15 printing plants up and down the East Coast. My dad went on the same vacations that owner did. My dad had 10 or 15 people working for him. The paychecks were dramatically different, but the lifestyles were very similar. So growth for growth's sake doesn't make sense. I wanted to make a nice living. I wanted to be the parent that went to every one of their kids' in-school activities. I wanted to be, you know, that mom that would, you know, that homeroom mom that would go to the kids' schools and do things. I love that. I have a great relationship with my kids because of that and their friends, but it also cost me growth. But that growth, I don't regret because I'll never be able to get that time back if I didn't do that. And my family was most important. So growth for growth's sake is not the smart move. You need to figure out if you're working for a lifestyle or if you're looking to, you know, you have all these technology companies that build it because someone's going to buy it. 9.9999 out of 10 businesses will never, ever sell that way. So why try and build that 0.001% of a business? Why don't you enjoy your life and enjoy it? So I have had a great life. I got two great kids. I have a wonderful wife, and I don't regret anything that I've done. And, you know, at the end of the day, the money's still in the bank, so I've done well.
That's made several great points. And I think one I'd like to kind of dig into deeper is, would you say, and if so, how, that being a better family man to your kids, to your wife, makes you a better leader?
I went home the other day because I was upset with one of my employees. I talked with my wife and she looked at me and says, just take him out to lunch. Stop being angry. Just take him out to lunch. And we went out to lunch and we straightened everything out. It was a misunderstanding. And all of the tension and angst that I had going into my body went away right after lunch. I felt great. We need to listen to our kids and to our family on what's going on. My older daughter is my therapist. She's a psychiatrist. And, you know, she and I have drive time conversations. My youngest one is in sales, and I'm her mentor in sales. And we have drive time conversations. I love those times. I also talk with my clients as I drive home. But if one of my kids calls, that's the most important thing in my life. And they're 30 and 33. I have three other kids from my wife's past. And, you know, they pick up the phone. We would end this conversation right now if one of them called, I hate to tell you. Because the kids are most important. I just became a grandpa over the weekend.
Congratulations.
Lovely little young girl. And It's one of Julie's sons, but he's my son too. And it's all about family. So my staff is also my family. And this is going to sound strange. So are my clients. I love my clients. I don't work with people that I don't like. There's no sense in the amount of time that we all spend as business owners not enjoying the people that you're with. So I have a close-knit staff. The youngest person that worked for me, meaning time-wise, was 12 or 13 years. He just left a couple of years ago because he had an opportunity to go to South Carolina. My average person here is here for about 30 years. So, yeah, they're family.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing that. Some really powerful takeaways for our listenership, for sure. And I don't think anyone on this show has ever quite framed it that way. So I truly appreciate that. Going back to a conversation we had before this episode, you made a statement kind of looking back, and you said, and I want you to kind of give it some context and color for us, but you said, if I'm still doing this, I'll be out of business. And that's a pretty bold realization. So give us some color on that, Steve. What was going on at the time? What were you seeing, and what was convincing you that, hey, the business has to change?
I've had a lot of clients, a lot of prospects, a lot of people tell me that printing's going out of business. Hearing that from the mid-90s, going through the high-tech boom, I found a song that became my mantra. Video killed the radio star. Radio's doing unbelievable today. And when they were talking video back in the 90s, they were talking about television. Traditional television is dying. And I'm not going to say that it's dying, but it's changing. Cable came around, then, you know, all the internet came around, and then you got podcasts. So when people kept telling me this, I had to step back for a little bit and look at what my clients and my customer base, prospect base was doing and how they were consuming information that I was providing to them. We were a traditional printer, so we gave them information in paper and we used traditional printing presses. I woke up one day saying, if I still am running traditional printing presses in 5 years, I'll be out of business because technology is changing. My clients are changing. My competition is changing. Where it was John's Printing down the road, it became Staples or FedEx or Kinko's. Today, because of the changes, those are no longer my competition. My competition are much bigger companies. But I took a look at what I was doing. I had that same aha moment about 4 years ago going into COVID. If I'm running traditional manufacturing using digital printing presses, which we do today, I'll be out of business. So I took that opportunity during COVID to rethink my business and rewrite a business plan. And I completely rethought it. I went from a manufacturing mentality, I have presses, I have steel, to my clients don't care. What they want to know is, can I listen to what they want? Can I figure out how to deliver what they want at a competitive price? I don't need to be the lowest price, but I need to be competitive. And can I stand behind the quality of what they need? Instead of trying to fit them into a cookie cutter of what I did, I now opened up the areas. So as soon as I realized I needed to get out of a lot of that manufacturing, I also had to think through, I need to change my business plan. And in doing that, I had a great opportunity during COVID, because the world stopped, to actually step back and rethink it. COVID was a great problem for my company. The federal government and the state gave us a lot of money, so we have to thank them for that. We rethought our business and went into our customers and said, I'm a printing company, but let's rethink this whole thing. you're still bringing, one big part of our business is pharmaceutical launches, bringing out new drugs. You're still bringing out drugs. You still have sales staff that have to figure out how to sell it. Instead of going to a rah-rah meeting and training them in Hawaii or Las Vegas or wherever they went, you're saying, congratulations, look at your 13-inch laptop on your bed or in your dining room table, and now go sell. So we became a fulfillment company during COVID. We had to figure out how to keep our staff going. We also had to figure out how to help our clients. So we continued to print because we found a way to actually distribute our work out to the clients. Instead of just putting it in a box, we put it in Christmas wrapped it, because you're not going to Hawaii. So you're sitting in your dining room table for 3 days looking at a 13-inch monitor going like, geez, thank you. So we created this thing that we called Big Hug Boxes that were several hundred thousand went out during COVID. And to this day, we still send them out to people. And it's more of a gift. Even though it has your learning materials in it, it's a gift. We want you to value what was going there. So that was kind of a longabout way of answering your question. But it all rolled together because It was several years of ahas going, how do I change? And if you don't constantly look at your business, stop chasing technology. Start looking to your clients and find out what they're doing. There's too many people that are running around today thinking that technology is going to replace their employees. Mm. Maybe we should stop replacing our employees and find out, well, how can we train our employees to be better? I remember the high-tech boom and bust. The high-tech boom was going to make all of our worlds easier with computers. I don't know. I'm now available to my clients and to my staff 24 hours a day. I don't know how that got easier. It's an interesting question for someone to come back and answer, 10, 15 years down the road, how going from an 8-hour, 10-hour day went to 24 hours and it made it easier. Mm. We were allowed to do 3 people's worth of work with 1 person because we gave them technology. But is all of that technology growth good for us? Mm. So we have to kind of take a look at some of that.
That's a great perspective, for sure. Let me ask you something. As you started to make this shift, and it sounded like COVID afforded you the deep think time to really get clear on where you were going. You mentioned you have a lot of longstanding personnel, some 30 years. How did they, when you went out to them and said, hey, we're making some changes, we're going to pivot, we're going to move in some new directions as an organization, how did they take the news, Steve? How did they receive that?
Some took it very well, some didn't. COVID was devastating to everyone, including my staff. I tried as long as possible not to lay anybody off, and to the detriment of my own income and my own bank account. When it got to the point where I couldn't do it anymore, I figured a way of them at least making the exact same amount of money by utilizing the government's money. By working 3 days a week and getting paid 2 days a week. We stumbled through it. We're back. My staff saw how much it hurt me when I did that. And it was a very honest answer to them on what we had to do. When I was building the business plan, I got their insight into it. It wasn't, I was in a closed vessel. I knew that my staff was going to thin down, and my goal was to get my staff to, I had an older staff going through COVID. I had one young man that I just hired when I came into COVID, basically out of college. Everybody else was in their late 50s, 60s. My answer to everybody was, I want to get you to 67. And my last employee will get 67 in February next year. From that point, the business would change from being a true manufacturing wood office to a virtual business where we outsource everything. And at that point, people were asked, you know, if you want to come back in and work in that situation, let's talk about it and figure out how we can give you that space at your home or get you an office someplace that you can work. But this way, we're not all anchored to it. Two of the people retired. One of my staff decided that he wanted to move to South Carolina with his wife's family. And the other two are still here. One's taking retirement in September because she's 67. And the other one, he's found someone in his life in Florida. So everything's working out. Nobody got angry. My timeline worked out fine. And they're moving on with their life. I had some help with a couple people coming in and helping me present it to my staff, and how we can help them through this transition also. So it was a lot of my ideas with a lot of their intake, and I massaged it. And then when I presented it, they already knew what was coming.
Well, it sounds like you didn't spring it on them. It sounds like you enlisted their voice, you know, every step of the way. So when you did say, okay, this is what we're doing, it wasn't, you know, something that dropped out of the sky. It's something that had been a dialogue that was moving forward for some period of time. As you look back now, any regrets that you feel you made the right call?
No. It's been a proven model over the last, you know, 3 or 4 years. We've been implementing it. We've been implementing a lot of it before I had that change of business plan anyways. I'm looking forward to continue to travel. One of the reasons that I wanted to do this is I have the ability to service my clients from anywhere in the world. COVID taught all of us that the technology is there. As much as I don't like technology, technology is there, and it's wonderful because we couldn't have this conversation if we didn't have it, that I can help my clients from anywhere in the world. They don't care if I manufacture it, but they also don't care if I'm sitting next to them, because they're not sitting in their buildings a lot of times either. So I was in Hawaii hiking on a volcano in April, talking with a client on planning out an event for them. I've done it in Alaska. I've done it all over the world. And this change will allow me to continue to service my clients, but also allow me to have some of the freedom in my life that I'm looking for.
That's awesome. That's really great. The going back to your background before coming in as the second gen at Harwell, and working with some of the large scale printing operations, we talked before this conversation about how you often look to break every project into critical components. Mm-hmm. So talk about, did that come into play as you were starting to make this pivot? Was that how your mind was working at it and saying, not unlike what you did with your folks when you said, oh, there's a lot of things that need to change, but let's start with the most critical first step, you know, and then we'll take other steps from there. Was the process of transformation similar, Steve? Like you said, all right, here's what we're doing, but here's what's going to happen tomorrow. Like, you know,
I had to, and I continue to break jobs down or projects down into smaller components. You know, nobody knows how to build a full car. There's a zillion pieces in a car. Nobody knows how to build anything when you really look at it. They know how to buy the different parts and then assemble it. But, you know, I had to learn over the time to look at large projects, break them down into components, and then either execute on that component or delegate that part out to someone. And then I had to step back and watch all the parts be brought together. That's a very important thing to look at in any business, the one person can't do everything. So you have to figure out how to break things down and hand them off to different people. In the printing industry, machinery is very expensive. So instead of having all the machinery, we all outsource work to other people, but we still have to take the responsibility for it. And that gets very difficult sometimes to be able to delegate out that work to someone else, either it be a staff member or a different business. But I had to learn how to do that and follow that. And COVID and with the change of our business, I had to learn how to do that a little better. So that was my goalpost that I had to jump over the last 3 or 4 years. And I think I've done a pretty good job of working through that.
For sure. So every generation and after 120 or more episodes, we hear all kinds of different challenges. Every generation, though, seems to inherit a different. So in your case, your parents built the company. You, as the next generation, reinvented the company. When you think about today's rising generation of family business leaders, what do you think, if you were to aggregate it, what is their defining challenge? What's the defining challenge of the next generation coming up right now?
You have two eyes, two ears, one mouth. Use them. Stop talking. Stop looking at technology. Start understanding your staff. Start understanding people. Start understanding your clients. And treat them with respect and help them grow, and they'll help you grow. Mm-hmm. We use technology as a tool. And sometimes it becomes a boat anchor because we use it too much. I hope the next generation will look at technology as a tool, but not as an all-inclusive answer to everything. You have to look at people. Your clients are people, your staff are people, your family are people, and you have to give them respect where it's due. You have to listen to them. You have to help them. You have to mentor them. You have to train them. And with that, you also have to listen to them because they all have opinions and they all might not be right. But when you sit down and you listen to those opinions, you might actually have your opinion changed. So when you take over the next part of your parents' business, take a look at it from a view of, I got Johnny and Billy and Mary and Fred working for us. They don't know anything. They're working for you for a reason, and they're giving you money, getting you money from your clients for a reason. Your clients don't know anything. Well, maybe you should step back and look at that and see what they actually do know, because you might be able to learn from them. They might not know your business, but they know their business. And that once you start learning that, and stop looking at technology and start looking at people, your business will grow.
That's awesome. Yes, for sure. I think a lot of times the next generation comes in with maybe a touch of I know it all arrogance. But what they really need to be coming to the table with is genuine, balanced curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, asking questions is always okay. You know, coming in to make change for change's sake, sometimes not okay.
Yep. It's at 20, in your 20s, you haven't learned humility. You haven't learned a lot of things. You have to learn that over time.
Sure. So we have been talking and touching on technology, and certainly you have a very pragmatic view of technology and where it sits. But as we think about family-governed B2B companies, to what extent do you think they might be underestimating the technology shift going on right now? So I'm talking about predominantly the AI and automation movement, if you will.
You know, That's an interesting question. AI is a tool. The internet's a tool. Software is a tool. Everything is a tool. If your coffee cup that you're using right now is a tool, it's a tool to get a flavored liquid to your mouth to nourish you. If AI is everything, then we need to go and get little cones of silence from Get Smart, and all of us walk around in them, because AI is going to give us everything. It's not. It's not going to be there. It's a tool to give you information. It can give you correct information, and it can give you wrong information. It can give you a lot of information too fast. But when you utilize AI or any tool, you have to step back and look at it and say, do I agree with that? I use ChatGPT to write articles. But all they are is bullet points. Then I hand it over to someone else to edit after I've fact-checked what I've asked it to write. Because we don't want me writing, because I would not sound smart. We need someone else that's going to understand your strengths and your weaknesses. So AI and all of technology is a tool to help you do your job better. It's not to do your job. And in most small family businesses, we need tools. Plumbers need wrenches. Electricians need wire. And, you know, house builders need hammers. Everybody needs a tool. It's only a tool, so you can only use it for what it's being used or what it's made for. It's not going to replace your staff. It will make our lives a little easier. In 5 years, this might be a whole different conversation.
Mm.
Because what was last year and what was last month is completely different today. You can't be scared of it either, but you have to respect what it is, a tool. Mm. And, you know, if you ask the same question to ChatGPT or Anthropic that I ask, the same words, the same day, you should get the same answer. Unless you have a model that you've built, I believe they call them agents now, if you have an agent you've built that's tuned to you, even at that point, they'll be similar, but it'll be an answer towards you versus general. So it's the old-fashioned Encyclopedia Britannica. It has a lot of information. The librarian has a lot of information. The librarian can help you do this too, but nobody wants to walk into a library.
At least not for the same reasons they used to.
Exactly. You go to the library on weekends because it's cool. This weekend, it will be very comfortable at the library.
Yes, it will. So you made a point earlier. Sometimes I really feel for the printing industry, because it seems like everybody beats up on the printing industry, and, you know, everybody wants to declare, print is dead. You know, that declaration must have been made across your career, you know, 10 times over, if not more. Yet, here we are, you're still growing, printers are still doing well, they're still doing their thing. So, when you look categorically at the industry, Steve, why do you think some companies like yours are able to make, you know, that reinvention transition and that transformation, where others, you know, just simply fade away?
Well, it's not just a printing industry thing. Take a look at Amazon. In theory, Amazon killed the malls. Every business must look at who they are and keep looking at new places for new services. Look at auto repair shops with the advent of EV cars. It's a completely different world for them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a great fan of EV cars because I think they're coming in too fast. But an auto mechanic is going to have to change because his main job is fixing an engine, and now it's an electric engine, which is a completely different world. I still go back to my favorite song, Video Killed the Radio Star. Radio's still here. It's how do you get rid of all that clutter that's in the background of the noise that people are telling you that something's dead? Are malls dead? No, malls are not dead. Are retail stores dead? No, retail stores are not dead. What's happening is the marketplace has changed and the buying habits have changed. So Amazon made a massive change in the way people buy by being able to pick up their cell phone and go ding, 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 done, and it shows up an hour and a half later. Is that good for our world or bad for the world? I don't know. But over the last 10 years, and they started off as a bookstore, by the way. Mm-hmm. So how do you go from a bookstore to being one of the biggest retailers in the world? If you look at buying habits of your client base and the people that you want to find, you'll find a way to stay relevant to them. My client base stopped buying traditional print for corporate meetings because someone said, well, it's bad, and started putting it all on laptop computers because large server farms are better than, you know, having print that's recyclable. So I could go out of business where I can present them with other ideas. So we presented them with branding the tops of the laptops with vinyl, and they went with it. So all their sales staff run around with branded laptops. Or, you know, we have to think outside of the box. So you can't just assume that you're dead. You have to take your blinders off, stay in your lane, but take your blinders off and see what's out there that you can present to your client that will help them, and also allow you to move. I haven't found an EV car yet that doesn't need to have its wheels rotated, that doesn't need to have its brakes redone, that doesn't need to have lube jobs done on the chassis. So the auto mechanics might not be fixing engines until those electric engines need to be fixed. But there's still work for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think every business, not just printing, every business has to relook at, on an ongoing basis, what makes them relevant to their client base.
Awesome. And speaking of client base, so today you service agencies, you service corporate event teams, and you're supporting a number of Fortune 500 companies with events, product launches, and supporting that activity. How have, on the client side, in your perspective, Steve, how have their expectations changed, or how do you anticipate them continuing to shift in the years ahead?
We talked about some of it. Technology is coming in and allowing virtual meetings, so people are staying home. You know, why do I need to fly them to someplace? They're also finding that the virtual has limitations, attention span. They're finding that when they have a group of people in a room, they can observe better the group of people and see who need help. When they're at home, you can't do that. But the client expectations for me is, how do I help my clients teach their staff in a lot of the corporate training things that we do? How do we help our clients sell things or market things through trade shows? When you do a virtual trade show, which happened during COVID, it didn't work well. Mm. But I've also packaged up a virtual trade show and sent it to a pharmaceutical person that we were trying to get into, and another client was trying to get into. And we asked them to set these pieces up for us. So we got buy-in from them on a sales meeting. And then we sat on a Zoom meeting and had a Zoom meeting with them. And then 2 hours later, I actually knocked on the guy's door to pick the stuff up. And he says, you're in California? I said, yep, why wouldn't I be? We sat in a hotel room because you wouldn't let us get into a meeting. But now I've got a meeting with you. And, you know, sometimes you have to think outside the box. Our agencies, our client base is looking for us. It's such an old statement to think outside the box, but sometimes you do have to. Sometimes you got to think inside the box too, and stay within your lane that, you know, everybody wants you to stay into. But how do you get someone's attention? And over the next 5 years, I plan on flying more. And, you know, when I go someplace, I go and knock on a door for someone and say, hey, I'm in your town, I'm trying to make a meeting with you. The East Coast has got a lot of business for me, but so does the West Coast. Our third largest client's in San Francisco. So, and they have us do work in New York, which is crazy. But you know, go out and knock on their doors. And I don't think things are going to change dramatically over the next 5 years, other than things like Zoom are going to allow us to be more free, and technology will allow us to be more free to have meetings and help our clients a little easier. But we still have to do the same thing. We still have to think. We have to think for them and provide them services that they need, not what I sell. So if I go to XYZ Pharmaceutical and try and sell them on stuff that I only sell, but they don't need, I'm taking advantage of them. I'm not doing a job for them. I need to find out what they need and how I can help them in what they need.
Nice. So when that time comes, when your stewardship of Hartwell Press comes to an end, or the baton is passed and people look back, what would you hope that they would say about your mark, the mark you left, Steve, and your legacy?
Well, other than being the greatest guy in the world, I want them to know of me as a friend.
Okay.
I want them to know of me as a colleague, as a person that they could count on. Someone that never took advantage of them, that was honestly looking to help them. Yes, of course, it's going to help me. But if I take advantage of people, I'm nobody. I want them to know that I'm an honest person. And I also want them to know my family. My customers and my staff know my family. They met them. It's part of who I am. That's what I want people to know.
Awesome. And I would add to all that, an incredibly easy person to talk to, because I found that I've been hanging on your every word today. And I feel like we could probably talk for another hour, although we do have to wrap up soon. So if I may ask one more question.
Sure.
If any of our listeners wanted to connect with you or to learn more about Hartwell Express Press, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, the easiest way to get me is through email, Stephen@HartwellExpressPress.com, and it's very long, I know. It'll be in the show notes if you want to catch up with me. You can also call our phone number, 609-895-1955. If you have an old-fashioned phone, it still works. They bring here. But we're here for you. Our website also is HartwellExpressPress.com. There's a link up there. You can say, you know, contact me, and we'll reach out to you. Once you start working with you, with us, we give you our cell numbers and you reach out to us all day long, and we're here for
you. Nice. Thank you. Well, to wrap up, Steve, what's really resonating is that longevity in business across multiple generations is certainly not about protecting yesterday's business model. It's about recognizing change early enough and then having the courage and the fortitude to reinvent the business before either somebody else does it for you or before the business becomes obsolete. For family business especially, that requires the confidence to honor what the previous generations built, while also having the courage to challenge assumptions that no longer serve the future. So Steve, thank you so much for your brutal honesty, your candor, and for sharing your wonderful story and perspective. Again, we've been speaking with Steve Portrude, president of Hartwell Express Press, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Steve, thanks so much for joining us today.
Ed, thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.